Welcome to the Ripple Revolution Podcast. In this podcast, we take a new look at how we think about making a difference, with an approach that integrates living an energized life and making the world a better place. The podcast shares insights, ideas, and inspiration from personal development thought leaders and people out there creating ripples and making waves. In today's podcast, I had a chance to talk with former Starbucks president Howard Behar. When Howard joined Starbucks, there were 28 stores. By the time he retired, the company had grown to 15,000 stores on five continents. An avid proponent of servant leadership, Howard has been described as the keeper of Starbucks' soul. He's also the author of a book, It's Not About the Coffee, which describes the leadership principles he learned and applied during his time with Starbucks. Hello, Howard. Thank you so much for coming and joining us on the Ripple Revolution podcast. I'm excited to have you here and looking forward to hearing your insights and your stories.
Well, thanks, Kurt. Thanks for inviting me.
It's my pleasure. So first, I would like to talk a little bit about one of the things that I talk a lot about is how each of us really is the originating point for any impact that we make in the world. And so it follows from that that the more energized we are, the more grounded we are in our lives, the more we have to put out there making a difference in the world. So there's something that you talk about in It's Not About the Coffee that I love, the idea of, and that is the idea of what you describe as finding and wearing your one hat. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means and why it's important?
Well, I think throughout our lives that we can tend to be influenced by events, by our surroundings, by other people in our lives without the realization that people are asking us to be something other or somebody other than who we are. And the reason that happens is because we don't spend much time really thinking about who we are or what matters to us. We don't think about what our values are. We don't think about what our mission in life is. And that's what I mean by wearing your hat. Your hat is basically what your values are, what your mission in life, what your greater purpose is, what you want to leave behind, all the things that go into making up who you are. And so the one hat idea is it was a reminder to me to remember what my hat was and to remember that I needed to be able to wear that hat throughout my whole day. It didn't make any difference whether I was at home with my family, with my wife, with my kids, with my grandkids, or if I went to work and was in a high-test environment like Starbucks, or if I was working in a nonprofit, or I was at, you know, visiting my parents. That Howard needed to be Howard. And in order to do that, I had to do the work to discover who Howard was and, in essence, what hat Howard wore. And so that's what it's really about, is that sense of discovery, that idea about who you are, why you matter in this life, what you want to accomplish, you know, how you want to live your life, all the questions that we kind of have about ourselves that tend to go unanswered.
Right. Now, looking at that, it seems like, well, of course, I want to know who I am and I want to live that. What, out in the real world, what difference does it make having an awareness of what your hat is versus not having that awareness?
Well, let's take an example from our home life. You wake up in the morning and you're married or you got a significant other in your life and you look across the bed and as you look across the bed, you kind of go in your brain, uh-oh, I better put on my significant other or spouse hat because there is a conflict in our relationship that's unresolved. And in order for me to have peace in this relationship, I have to be what that other person wants me to be. And we forget about self, and we think about only about what that other person wants and what that other person needs, and we start to lose track of who we are. And it can come out in simple things. Let's say that you happen to be with another human being that thinks it's okay to shoplift, let's say, and that just goes against your values. You love that person for all the other things, but this little shoplifting, idea for you is just, it's something that you just struggle to deal with. You put it away. You don't talk about it. And by doing that, right, by letting that go, by not addressing the issue, you're kind of abdicating your values or who you are for the other person's values. Now, that happens sometimes, in many small things that we do in our lives. But there are some things that really matter to us, like being an honest person. If you have somebody that you're living with that's dishonest, it causes conflict with inside yourself, with inside the relationship. And so that's I'm talking about that kind of thing of where you are not living up to the things that matter to you most. And the conflict that's caused with inside yourself or within your relationship either is destroying you or destroying the relationship.
Sure. So a lot of it is really having the clarity to be able to align yourself with what feels right, what feels natural, and make those choices in your life.
Yeah, and you make the choices. Let's say that you're a person, you have a spouse that likes to shoplift, just little things, right? And, you're an honest person, but, there's so many good things about this person, and you try to talk them out of it, but they don't. And as long as you're not with them, you set up some boundaries and stuff like that. Maybe you could live with that, and there are probably some people that can't. Or, that's a pretty black and white or clear issue, but a lot of times they're not so clear, and they're not clear because we haven't really thought about what matters to us. And so, there are things that bug us or things that hurt us or whatever it is, and we never have the conversation with that other person and trying to clarify, and which would allow you to live a more fulfilling and productive life and allow that relationship to grow and to blossom. And so usually we live in that kind of space, not where things are so absolute, but things that are not so absolute.
Right.
And, you go to work and your boss says, I really need you to be here tonight, but you've made a commitment to your child to be at a baseball game.
And so
and
then
you,
what
and
do you do?
You have to make a trade-off, family, work.
And so knowing
and
what your
hat
is.
And we all make those trade-offs, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And so it's the trying to understand who you are, what matters to you, what things you're willing to trade off, because you might be willing to trade off that baseball game. You call your son or daughter and say, honey, I'm sorry that I have to let you down. Or you might say to your boss, I want to do that, and I will, I can't do it right now, but I will come back after the or whatever it is. So it's really an understanding of who you are, what matters to you, rather than always being mad or disappointed, right, and not knowing
exactly
why, is trying to understand who you are and what matters. So, you don't just all of a sudden get angry and you don't even know why.
Right. And it's amazing, really, or not so amazing, because it certainly doesn't get reinforced out there culturally, but amazing how little people frequently really know about themselves, about what makes them tick. They'll react to things. Certainly they know it at that level, but being able to articulate it can be more of a challenge.
Yeah, we just act or react, and we are unable to bring peace to the issue because we just, we don't know where we are. We're mad. You come home and you say, that boss of mine, he wanted da-da-da-da-da-da-da, or that, that significant other, my husband, my wife, whatever it happens to be, instead of dealing with the issues in the construct of who you are and who that other person is.
Yep. So as I was preparing for this interview, I came across something that you said on website at the business school of the University of Washington that really resonated me. with me, and it was, we've got to help our students understand it isn't about leadership with a capital L. It isn't about leading others. It's about leading yourself and living your life full of your values. That's how we're going to change the world. Could you talk a little bit more about that? Because, of course, you said the magic words, which is that's how we're going to change the world. So what do you mean by all of that, and how does it have an impact?
Well, it follows on to the conversation that we were just having. So, and the reason it came up that way at the University of Washington when we were talking about that is that, you know, the universities have these all sorts of leadership courses. And the leadership courses tend to revolve around this idea of leading people, leading organizations. What I call leading with a capital L, leading with power, leading with influence. But very little work is done at the university level on learning to lead with a small L, which I mean learning to lead yourself, learning to understand, again, what your hat is, what your values are, and then how do you put those things to action in your life. And the most important person you're ever going to have to lead is you. I mean, what gets in our way in life is usually not other people. It's us.
Absolutely.
It's that little board of directors. So why do I believe that that's what will change the world? Because the more we know about ourselves, the more conscious we are of our own values, the more conscious we are of what we want to accomplish in life, allows us to better align our energy and our efforts and our time with those things. But if
right.
you're not aware of those things, if you don't learn to manage yourself, I'll get off a little bit here, but I have what I call my little board of directors that sit on my shoulders, and that little board of directors is advising me every day, all day long. You know, it's the self-talk. And I've had to learn to manage that board of directors. Because if I don't, what happens is they're pulling me and jerking me around without me being thoughtful about it. And many times it gets me into trouble. My emotions get carried away, whatever it happens to be. And so I just believe that if we're going to change our world, the first thing we need to do is change self.
Absolutely.
So that's why I say learning to lead yourself first, learning to lead with a small L. You know, and the capital L is the leadership with power, influence. The small L is the leadership of self.
And in many
ways, the truth is, I could make the case that the capital L is really learning to lead yourself, and the small L is learning to lead others. That's what I believe. If you learn
right.
to lead yourself really well, the rest of it falls into place.
Right. And in many ways, the learning to lead yourself, as you're describing it, is more challenging than the capital L leadership, if nothing
else.
Yeah,
that's
then.
True. I mean, no question, because for many of us, you know, we hide from ourselves. That board of directors influences us. But I think they're both difficult. You know, I mean, I'm not undervaluing the skills that it takes to learn to lead organizations or to lead ideas. Or to lead in communities or in families or whatever. Those are important things. I'm just saying that it's not or, it's and. And if the foundational piece of leadership is learning to lead self, then the other things tend to fall into place.
Absolutely. So on the subject of leadership, one of the elements of one of the ways of making a difference in the Ripple Revolution framework is the interactions that you have with people and the interactions that we have at work is, of course, a big chunk of most of our days. So I'd like to talk a little bit about leadership from a perspective of making a difference and how you see leadership as potentially being a vehicle for making a positive impact in the world.
Well, I believe in a concept called servant leadership, and it's, you know, as old as the hills, but the term was coined by a man named Robert Greenleaf. And basically what that means is that leaders are there to serve their organization or the people in the organization in the pursuit of the goals of the organization. But servant leaders understand intrinsically that in order for the goals of the organization to be met, the people in the organization have to have their goals met, have to have their needs met. And so servant leaders focus on not only the goals of the organization or the needs of the organization, but they focus also, and most importantly, on the needs of their people. And so, you know, I think that as you look around the world, and certainly throughout history, and we look at the people that have really accomplished great things, that have lasted generations, it's the people that somehow understood that their job was to serve their people in the pursuit of the organization's objectives or goals. And so, you know, I think that we, you know, we see organizations all around us, I mean, that do that very well. And we see organizations that don't do that very well. But I think the way you build a long-lasting, productive organization is the idea of servant leadership, helping your people to get what they need, what they want, in the pursuit of the goals of the organization.
So, from a perspective of making a difference, it's really all about what do you need, employee, person who's working for me. What do you need? How can I help you? How can I help you get that?
Yeah. What do you need in terms of what you're trying to do? Mm-hmm. What do you need for you to feel whole in our organization? And how can I help you? And how can I support you? And I'm not talking about a lack of accountability. Absolutely. You know, servant leadership isn't about some soft skill that, well, you just be nice to everybody. It's the opposite of that. It's setting high expectations, creating opportunities for people to be accountable and responsible, holding them accountable, but being there to serve them and being there to help them in what they're trying to achieve.
Absolutely. So it sounds like the servant leadership has been really woven through your experience in your career.
Certainly, no question about it. It came along at an early age in my growth, and when I was in my mid-20s, and you know, I've been a student of it ever since. And it's, you know, I have failed many times, and I've had some successes along the way in terms of being a good servant leader. But I have found that it works. You know, if you just want to go to the basic, you know, premise of it all, that I think that servant-led organizations are much more productive than non-servant-led organizations over periods of time. It doesn't mean that non-servant-led organizations aren't productive or that they don't achieve results. I mean, you know, I wouldn't call Steve Jobs, he was not a servant leader by any stretch of the imagination. He was able to accomplish a lot of things, but he also did a lot of damage along the way. So, you know, I mean, we all love our iPads and our iPhones and iPods and all that stuff, and certainly we appreciate that, and we appreciate his creativity. But I think the jury is out on how that organization is going to survive, you know, without him, because
right.
of the nature of the people that could put up with that. So,
right.
you know, we'll see.
So if there was one, so let's say somebody, maybe they come to servant leadership naturally, maybe they don't, and they're really just starting to wrap their head around this and saying, well, how do I really show up to be a servant leader? If there was just a one tip for how to start focusing on that and what to do, what would that be?
Well, I think, you know, number one, I would do a little research and a little reading. And there's a great little pamphlet called The Servant as Leader, written by Robert Greenleaf. It was his first essay on servant leadership. It's not an easy read, and it's kind of not up to date, but it's good. And there's lots of great material. James Autry wrote a book on servant leadership that I like a lot. But I think you start to study and start to read and about what other people do, and then figure out how do you integrate it into your own life and your own leadership models. And you know, that old issue, that old idea that practice makes perfect. You know, you try things, and primarily by learning to lead yourself. You know, like you have to learn to lead yourself first. You have to serve yourself first too. And right. So, how does it fit within you? How do you manage yourself? How do you lead yourself
right.
in a servant manner? And then this whole idea of how you do it in organizations, and what kind of behavior does it mean? And you'll find things that work and things that don't work for you, because it has to become part of you. It's not a technique to get things done. It's a way of living, a way of leading. It becomes you, and you become it.
So it
and
really
so,
is something.
There's no shortcut to this. You study it, you practice it, you talk about it, you get around people that want to do it and people that are doing it, and you learn.
Excellent. So with your own path, you retired some time ago, and I read an interview where you were talking about the challenges of finding your footing once you retired. Could you share a little bit about what you learned from that whole experience?
Well, it was when I retired from Starbucks, you know, and you know, I kind of lost track of a little bit who I was. I used to tell people, "You are not Starbucks, and Starbucks is not you." And of course, I broke all the rules, and it became part of me, and I was part of it, and I couldn't have that. I just was. Difficult for me to have that separation. And so when I retired, you know, I had always thought about, you know, I always set goals, and I had what I called career goals, and all of a sudden I didn't have a career. And I went through depression, you know, where it was just difficult for me to get going every day and to try to figure out what I was doing. I'd go to bed thinking about it. I'd wake up thinking about it. And it was just extremely stressful times, a lot of gray days. And one day I was laying on the sofa, and I was, you know, it was really gray. And I was trying to figure out what the hell was my life was about. What, you know, what was I going to do? And it wasn't that I was busy, but not fulfilled. And I was laying there, and the words came into my head, Howard, your life's work is still your life's work. Your life's work is still your life's work. And that's when I decided that my life wasn't about a career, but it was about life's work. And my life's work had been about not only trying to develop myself as a better human being, continuing on the journey of servant leadership, but also helping others to discover that within inside themselves. And I tried to do that within organizations, within inside of Starbucks. And I said, you know, I don't need to be part of Starbucks in order to continue on that journey. I don't need to be doing that work there in order for me to be fulfilled. And it was amazing the transition that took place in such a very quick time. It was almost as if this one door closed and a giant door opened. And it took me a while, but, you know, I figured it out, and I moved forward. And I kind of got out of those doldrums and that depression and, the, you know, the grayness in my life. And it set me free.
What I love about that story is there is really this idea of it's not so much that your career is your life's work as much as it is your career is a vehicle for your life's work to unfold.
Right.
And really that concept opens the door to, okay, what other vehicles are there for my right. life's work to unfold?
Right. Exactly. Okay. And I, you know, as I look back at it, I think that that it's a good idea to think in terms of life's work and not career. It kind of changes the questions you ask yourself. And it helps you think about what it is you want to do, how you want to do things, what your greater purpose is, what you want to contribute. To the point, you know, my life's work may not have been working. Maybe my life's work, so to speak, was painting. I had a job at flipping burgers or whatever it is to pay for my life's work.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it just makes a difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that thinking in terms of my career is my vehicle for, in a way, my career is my vehicle for meaning. It certainly can be a vehicle for meaning, but identifying it as that really has a pretty limiting effect on us.
Yeah. Well, career, it's when you say life's work, what's my life's work? It's about what I want to do. I don't have to manage my career. I need to live my life. It's different.
Yep. Absolutely. With your life's work, looking at that, what inspires you about that?
Well, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, we all, there's a payoff in everything that we do, whether we like to admit it or not. And, you know, I choose to be around people. I get enthusiastic about things that other people are doing. And I love that part, you know, of finding out how other people are living their lives and doing their life's work, whatever it happens to be. And so it's fulfilling to me. And if I can help in any way, help other people in other way, it makes me feel better about myself. You know, it just does. And so, you know, it's fulfilling, and it just makes my life happier. You know, it's about the best thing I can say. And that I like to get up in the morning, you know, because of it.
And
I have a purpose that's bigger than myself, and I just need that, you know. Not everybody does. And, you know, I think it helps everybody if they want to, but for me, it's just I need it.
Absolutely. And that, I think, whether people perceive it as something they need or not, I think that does, having that focus on something bigger than oneself, it does take us out of our small world and kind of open up the horizons, open up our experience, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it does that. You know, I mean, I've talked to many people that, you know, they don't want a purpose, a bigger purpose, you know. They want to live totally in the moment every day. Whatever happens, they deal with it, you know, and that's okay. You know, that's their life's work, you know? And so that's just not me. I just need to be fulfilled. And the way I get fulfilled the best is by serving others.
Excellent. So one last question as we head into the home stretch here. One of the things that really gets in people's way about pursuing one's life's work, pursuing whatever it is, pursuing anything bigger than what's immediately in front of them and here's served up on your platter, is the fear and doubt that we encounter. And sooner or later, most of us are going to encounter that.
Sure.
What have you found to be most effective in grappling with that and moving past that?
That's a great question. Well, for me, I've always been a goal setter. I've always, from the time I was in my even before, I used to call them dreams, hopes and dreams, you know. And then I got somebody made me conscious about it and said, "Well, you're talking about goals and objectives here, you know." And I said, "Okay." And so I have always had a plan, and I try to live out that plan, and I set goals for myself. When I'm in trouble the most emotionally, you know, it's because I've lost sight of what I'm trying to accomplish. Just being busy is not good enough for me. I need not only a purpose, a greater purpose, you know, a mission in life, but I also need to have goals that drive me, that fit underneath that greater mission or greater purpose. And so the tool for me that's been most effective is really a simple little tool. It's just writing down my goals, what I want to do, holding myself accountable, and trying to achieve those goals.
So it sounds like it gives you a bit of a framework to operate with, and
yeah,
and something more tangible than just wide open, here we are.
Yeah, I can't operate like that. It can't be wide open, here we are. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't have wide open, here I am days, and that I don't allow that to happen. Those times, of course. I can be as lazy laying on the sofa, reading a book and avoiding things I need to do like anybody else. But I really am most effective. My life is most productive. I feel most fulfilled when I'm working on the things that I want to accomplish in my life, and I'm clear about those things.
Excellent. So I thank you very much for joining me here. I've really enjoyed the conversation, and look forward to sharing that with folks out there. And I appreciate your time and your insights.
Thank you very much, Kurt. Thanks for asking me.
My pleasure.